You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
Come from 406, right? Let's get out. The pandemic, I know we have our concerns still. We're all being safe about it, but I miss Montana. How about you guys?
Yeah.
I know it. I know you do, too. So that's what we're doing on the Toe Rope Tour. Welcome. It's from Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana. I'm Tom Schultz. We are 406 in Shelby, Montana today. Our Toe Rope Tour continues. We visited Great Falls and Lewistown and Helena. And now it's time to talk to some of the good folks up here along the High Line in Shelby, Montana, or as Dwayne was calling it, Shelberia. I think that's appropriate at time, too. Again, thank you all for being here. Later on, we'll be talking with Jamie Brunel. She's with the CEO of the Mariah's Healthcare Services. We also have Chris Ingenthrone from the Mariah's Electric Co-op. And then Dwayne, as I mentioned, is Gilgetis. Judy Richmond's going to be by, but first, how about Dwayne Iverson and Holly Hovland? Holly's the mayor of Sunburst.
I love that. How you laugh when you say that.
Yeah, I love how you kind of roll your eyes when you say that.
Yeah, that's very true.
Thank you both for being here. Dwayne, and I think people here in Shelby will know, but across Montana, you guys are related, father and daughter. Yep. And I suppose that's where the genes get passed along, Dwayne, about in terms of helping the community, because there are a lot of things that you guys were involved in, but it all starts with Tool County Forward.
Yep. Yeah, Holly's my youngest of six, so, yep.
Oh, you got a lot of them then.
And what's interesting is my dad was mayor of Brockton way back in time.
Oh, okay.
So it's been in the family, so yeah. But Tool County Forward was a deep program that we looked at when the pandemic hit and the business had been shut down for a while. And originally they were told they were going to be closed for 2 weeks. They dug into their savings, and then it was longer than that. And you start seeing that they're going to struggle and not be able to reopen. And so we thought something needs to happen. The state and federal programs are going to be too late in helping them. The PPP program had just come out, but it wouldn't help them because they're closed. They're forced by law to be closed. So, okay, yeah. What are you going to do? And that's when we decided we need to do something locally. So we came up with about $75,000 of local funds donated by people. And then the city was able to match us with $75,000 from an old grant they had and stuff. And so with that, we were able to distribute about $128,000 to local businesses. And then we did a program with coins that Holly's husband made the coins for us, and she can go into that and stuff. And we did about just under $5,000 worth of stuff there.
That's a remarkable kind of come together. You know, the city pitched in. And then in the middle of all of this, you've got community members who are probably unsure about where their futures are going to, but yet they go, hey, I'm going to help here.
Well, and I think as much as the financial support, the emotional support was there saying, we feel your pain.
Yeah.
So
it was pretty incredible how quickly the money came together. And Dwayne he was a huge part of that. He made all of that happen, people donating the money, and he put up money of his own to start it and to encourage other people to do so. And it wasn't begging people for money. It was people who wanted to help.
Yeah.
The money was gathered very quickly, and we were able to start helping businesses right away. It was like there was an idea. He had the idea. He talked to a few of us. We got the group together, and we were distributing funds within weeks.
What did the businesses do with that money? I mean, I know they're very concerned about keeping their employees employed.
Well, actually, when you're closed for that long, like as a restaurant, okay, your food's gone bad. Okay, and yeah. So now you got to buy new food. Well, you probably were maybe a little bit behind to your supplier before. How are you going to get that food now and open on a limited basis, okay? Because when you're opening back up, you weren't opening full. Okay, and now you got all the cleaning you had to do between people and the whole bit. And so with that, you're going, okay, what's going to happen here? And that's why we looked at what needed to be done, and then we helped them come up with a plan of here's how we're going to protect you when you come into our place and stuff like that. And we tried to come up with innovative ideas that way. The other ones that got hurt real bad were like the beauticians because they're closed too, so there's no income. Okay, but you still got the expense. Okay, you still got the utilities, you still get your payments and all that type of stuff. And that's primary that the group that was helped the most, because a lot of the people came under the PPP, then they were able to do that. And so that's one of the questions we asked is, you know, if that helped you, we just tried to help the people that fell through the cracks is what we're trying to do.
You know, and I can see if I'm a business owner, I'm very uncertain about not only all that stuff, but what do I do on the other side of the pandemic? And, yep. And getting that emotional support must have helped a lot of people.
It did. It helped a ton of people. And the unknown. We kept on hearing 2 weeks, 2 weeks, two right. weeks, 2 weeks. And as we heard that more and more, we realized how much we needed to help these people and to get them through this time, because it was an uncertain amount of time. Every 2 weeks, it kept getting extended. And they needed to make it through that. And we wanted that for them. We wanted our community to thrive. We wanted our businesses to stay open, and we wanted them to be successful. And that was the whole goal behind the project. And then we had the coins. My husband, Garrett.
Do it. Talk about it.
Yeah, he made the coins on a wood CNC cutter, and they were all Tool County Forward $20 coins. And the participating businesses would accept the coin as money.
Wow.
And if you didn't spend the whole $20, the remaining balance on it went to the next person who came in. So you paid it forward to the next person. So if you spent $15, the next person got $5. And the coins were circulated throughout the community. We had all of the businesses that participated got to give away coins to different people. And if they saw someone come into their business that needed a coin to be able to pay for something, they gave them that coin. We even had a water bill paid with coins. It helped a lot of people. And it was a way to reach everyone in the community, not just businesses, after we got through giving the businesses their money.
That's Holly Hovland. She's with the Levitt Group here in Shelby. Dwayne Iverson, also with us here on Voices of Montana. We're talking about Tool County Forward. This was initiated when the pandemic kind of came about. But, Dwayne, as you mentioned, and it just strikes me as so real to these business owners that, here's how we can do it. Let's do it step by step by step. And they may have had a lot of questions. Now, going forward, they probably feel like, I'm not alone out here. In business, I'm here in a community that cares about the service I provide.
Well, and the big thing was, Lorette Carter from the city, she had sent a letter out and asked if there's something they could do, and I responded, and I threw that thought out is what started it. But the city was very supportive of us through this whole thing, and I mean, they've done more than you can imagine. But to me, this is the definition of community.
Yeah. There's a few other things that Tool County Forward, like I say, initiated during the pandemic. But I get a sense that you guys were probably stirring some things up for good in other ways, too.
What do you mean? I think that, talking about Lorette Carter, I feel like community is on her mind 24/7. That's all she thinks about, how to make it bigger, how to make it better, how to make businesses thrive, how to help people, how to make sure everyone's taken care of. Lorette is like the mom of the town. When it comes to economic development and keeping everyone thriving, she's always thinking about every single business in town and the community completely. So I think that she deserves so much credit for everything that happened with Tool County Forward and with everything that's happened in this community for the last, 40 years.
Yeah. Yep. Nice. She's a tow rope hero.
Yep.
Who comes to mind for you, Dwayne, when you think about Shelby's Tow Rope Heroes?
There's tons of them. I mean, everybody does their own thing in a lot of different ways. Levitt Group, if you go look at their site, they've been recognizing people for the last several months. And everybody does their own part, and no matter who you look at, somebody's involved somewhere, and stuff. And they do their thing and stuff. And we just encourage more people to do that. The big thing today with criticize a lot of millennials is they don't get as involved as much. And they don't understand that we all got to we got to shoulder that burden a little bit somehow, and that's what we did here. It did it. And when that thought was put out there, the money that came forward, the $75,000 came really fast in and never twisted anybody's arm. We never sent a second letter. It was just the money. They called up and says, can I help? And they wrote checks.
It was pretty incredible. And like he was saying, everyone in this community is a tow rope hero. Everybody has their hand in something and has for years. The Levitt Group, Travis, my boss, Travis Clark, had come to me and said, I think that people aren't understanding how involved people are in this community. I think that they walk down the street and they don't understand that this person does 10 different projects and no one has any idea. And he said, and we need to find a way to recognize them. So we started a Levitt Leader of the Week.
Yeah.
So that we could bring awareness to the community of how many people are involved in so many things that you don't think about. And we've been going strong with the Levitt Leader of the Week for it's been almost a year now.
I have to say, when I called Holly about coming on the show and talking about Tow Rope Heroes, she named off this person and that person. And in fact, we have got one of them lined up a bit later on here, too. Is it Kimmett? Robin. Yes, yep. Robin. Yeah. And so anyway, I want to. There's some other things that I think are cool that our statewide audience would appreciate to know. The Champions Park, and we'll be speaking here in just a little bit too, as I mentioned, with Chris Ingenthrone and Dwayne Drogettis. But you got a carousel going on. What's cool going on in Shelby right now?
It just goes to show how many people have so much dedication to making this such a great community. Harry Benjamin was the person who started the carousel. And it was a project that looked like a dreamer project. Uh-huh. Because you only see those carousels in places like Missoula and Helena and big places. And now there is this beautiful, brand-new facility with a vintage carousel. And they have ice cream and they have parties and... And Harry Benjamin has passed away now, and the carousel has not been open for that many years. Mm-hmm. And people stepped up and took over and are running the carousel and making this great place for the community to gather. And it's located right next to Champions Park, which was a dream of Christabel Madsen from decades ago. She always said, I'm going to make this park happen. And she thought selling 25-cent ice cream cones was going to build a $1 million park.
Ah.
And... she was kind of right.
She started somewhere, right?
She did. She started with the 25-cent ice cream cones. And again, Lorette Carter made it happen.
Yeah.
She made all of the – she applied for every grant she could possibly apply for. She set up a huge group of people that get donations and sold bricks. And now there's huge signage and there's silhouettes of the boxers. And it's just such a great memorial of what – took place in Shelby, Montana so many years ago, nearly 100 years ago, and Christabel Madsen's dream of 25-cent ice cream cones made it happen with Lorette's help.
I love that story.
Well, July 4th, 1923, Dempsey Gibbons.
Yep.
And, you know...
Well, Shelby's actually well known for that, as a matter of fact.
It, yep.
The story is it almost broke the town. Yep. You know?
It did break the town. A lot of the houses in town are actually built from the wood from the arena.
Oh.
And the location of Champions Park is actually part of the location of the actual site. It definitely isn't to scale by any means. But Pizza Hut did donate that chunk of land for the park to be able to happen there. And it's just such an incredible thing. And it's turning into such a beautiful park for people to visit and to know the history of Shelby, Montana and what's happened here.
And I got to fill people in. It was 1923, July 4th, heavyweight boxing match between Jack Dempsey and Tommy Gibson for the undisputed World Heavyweight Boxing Championship title of the world right here in Shelby, Montana. What's Tool County Forward going to do now, Dwayne?
Well, that's what we're working on. We're trying to help businesses that are trying to, you know, open up, new businesses that are opening up. We're not going to give them startup capital, but once they get going, we're going to try to help them get that extra kick, maybe in marketing. That type of thing is what we're looking at. We have funds there that we can do that. But I think that somebody's got to have their own money vested. If you're giving them investment in the beginning, they're usually not as committed as they are when it's their dollars. And so we're trying to find a way to be most effective that way.
Tool County Forward also didn't just help them get through the pandemic. It helped these businesses purchase equipment that they could build their business off of.
Yeah.
Part of their dreamer plan for their business that takes a lot of time that they were set back from because of a lack of income, that they were getting further and further away from offering other services that they had planned for in the future. And it gave a lot of them the ability to purchase equipment that they needed and things like that to continue with the dream that they had when they opened their business.
And I think that's encouraging all of us across the state. And that's what important thing. Dwayne Iverson and Holly Hovland, thank you guys for what you do. You're toll rope heroes. Thank you for being here on Voices.
Thank you guys for recognizing. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah.
Judy Richmond will join us next year as we come on back with more the Toll Rope Tour in Shelby, Montana on Voices of Montana. Toll Rope Tour, we're going to be in Hammer tomorrow and Malta on Friday. I want to mention, if you've got some Toll Rope heroes to nominate, please do that, because one thing is we want to honor them. I think you want to honor them as well. And it doesn't matter what it is. If they even just helped you shovel or got you out of the ditch or actually used a tow rope to get you home one day, that's what we're trying to do here on the Tow Rope Tour. As I mentioned, Haver and Malta this week, Shelby today, go to our website and nominate them, because it's kind of cool. We are giving away a zero-turn Bad Boy mower. It's right behind us here, Judy. It's a huge mower. Do you need this? You need a mower?
Of course.
Yeah, of course you do. Yeah. From Western Ranch Supply. So anybody you nominate, and if you nominate somebody, your name is going to go in the hat for that drawing as well. So Judy Richmond joins us here. And I have to tell you, Holly kind of told on you a little bit when I said, who's some total rope heroes? And she just popped off with your name and your story. And I think it's very courageous. And I'll tell it here just a little bit. Judy Richmond was the former director of the Marias Heritage Center, and that's a 38-apartment state license assisted living facility here in Shelby. You had retired right before the pandemic hit. Then you saw the pandemic. You saw the need. You went back in service to your family there, right?
Right. They are my family.
Yeah. I think that's very courageous. Thank you for doing that. What was in your heart when you did that?
Well, just to be really correct, I had actually gone back after I retired, and I was already working part-time. It wasn't just the pandemic.
They didn't let you retire, I presume. That's the case, yeah.
But I was working full-time at the beginning of the pandemic because we had so many staff that weren't able to work either through actually having COVID or through contact tracing.
Yeah.
And I just love the residents there, and that's kind of been my home away from home for a long time, and I wanted to be able to help out. So it was great. I was really happy that I was well and did not get COVID, and I was able to help out.
You moved right back into the center there.
Well, I stayed there because we did have an empty apartment, and it was just easier because there were long hours, and my husband was a little nervous I was going to bring it home to him. So it was actually just less stressful to stay there in the building. So it was really great.
A lot of uncertainty surrounding this, especially at the beginning. And that was hard, I'm sure, as a medical provider or a healthcare service provider to kind of tell your patients, you know, we'll walk through this. We'll be calm together, right?
Right. The residents were amazing. They had so many restrictions. All of a sudden, they were living in their single apartments. They couldn't come out in the hallways. They couldn't socialize. They couldn't play their games. And they never complained. They were so amazing. They were wonderful. And they just thanked us all the time for taking good care of them, for doing our best to keep them safe.
Yeah, it was real hard on all of our seniors. In fact, it was hard on a lot of families not to be able to go and visit their loved ones.
I can't even imagine how they felt, the families. And they were very supportive also. Even though they couldn't come in, they thanked us all the time for what we were doing and appreciated that we were keeping their loved ones safe. And we tried very hard to stay in close communication with them. We made calls to the families to give them updates. And most all of our staff helped with virtual visits, either FaceTime or Skype. So we were really trying to keep them connected.
There must have been a lot of total rope heroes who were helping you do this job for your residents there.
Yes, there were amazing people. The administration at our medical center, they had the incident command team, and they were continually meeting and learning the newest advice with the research of how we were supposed to handle the pandemic. And sometimes our protocols had to change several times a day. We would get new news and new information about how we were supposed to handle things. And so we couldn't have done it without them. And the staff at the medical center, of course, things really slowed down at the medical center because outpatient people weren't coming in.
Yeah.
So the staff over there were a little more available to help us out, and they were great. We had nurses from there who came over, and they set up meds and helped with showers and did hairstyling and, you know, everything that was needed. We had the National Guard was fantastic. It was they did sanitizing, walls, doorknobs, elevator buttons, you know, everything. Plus they did a lot of laundry. They helped deliver meals. We had a couple of musicians amongst the National Guard, and they entertained in the hallways. The residents weren't able to come out, but they could open their door, and so they were really great. We had nursing students who came because they were kicked out of school, basically, because the college is closed, so they were available to come and work with us. They were super, and we had some travel staff. Our HR department was continually getting staff for us because we had so many of our own staff that weren't able to work, and
We had nurses from Kalispell and from Great Falls who came and helped us out.
Wow.
We had certified nurse aides also that came from out of town, and they were really great. The rest of the staff at the hospital, we had the radiology clerk came over, and she worked with us for several weeks because our clerk was out, and she would do anything we needed. It was interesting because anytime we had to leave the building for errands, we had to change clothes because we'd gone out in the community and then we were coming back. And so that was time consuming. But yet we had people in the community who volunteered to do errands for us. And they brought us, the community was amazingly supportive. Yeah. They brought us food. They brought us brownies. One of our really great supporters brought us brownies 3 times, I think, for staff. And they brought us lotions and ear savers. And the high school students did some chalk out on our art out on our sidewalk to encourage us and let us know that we were appreciated. So we just really felt a lot of support from the entire community, from, you know, first of all, our family members and of our resident family members.
Thank you for telling that story. Thank you for painting that picture, because I think a lot of people don't see the picture as vividly as you just painted it for us on how many people came together and the need that was there. Judy, thank you so much for what you do.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Thank you.
Judy Richmond, we'll be back with more. We got some headlines, and then we've got another story to tell here of Total Rope Heroes in Shelby, Montana, after this from Brian Bennett.
All right.
Welcome back here. We are at Northtown Drug Wellness Gifts. Ann Clark's going to join us a bit later on. She's done a lot of things to kick in during this pandemic as well and help the town of Shelby and the surrounding community. Tow Rope Tour continuing on here. And Tom Schultz along now with Chris Ingenthrone. He's the GM of Marias Electric Co-op. And Dwayne Drogettis, Army veteran. And Dwayne and Chris, thank you guys for being here. Come up to Shelby. We came up from the highway, so we came up from the south, saw this huge flag, 30 by 50. And you know what? In the Shelby wind, it was sticking straight out, too. imagine that. Dwayne, talk about how that flag got there.
Well, it originally started with after 9/11 and a bunch of the local veterans who the original founding fathers were all Vietnam veterans. And tail end of the old school, they got together, long story short, got with all their skills and their everything, they got this whole flag put up, the pole, so much work. And and then with all the donations from the locals, such a patriotic community, it's just amazing to put something like that up.
They got behind you in a hurry, didn't they?
We got behind them.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, Chris, and you are also a part of this flag, because you guys change it
what we do with helping out the group and the flag, we provide the electricity for the lighting, and we also have we have the equipment that we can utilize to help with the changing of the flag. And I've got an employee, he's our mechanic, and he can design things. And sometimes we have problems with the cable raising and lowering the flag, and he's pretty innovative, and he goes up and takes care of that stuff, and helps Dwayne with any issues he has with the mechanical side of the flagpole.
Dwayne, how important was it to have Chris's help through all
that? I don't know how we would have done it without Marias River Electric and Ben and everybody. All the shortest pole up there is like 40 feet, and all of us old boys, we want to get on a stepladder anymore. So with all our equipment, call them anytime, because that flag has to be maintained, you could say 24/7, whether it's 40 below or 100 above. And Marias River Electric's always there for us.
I want to keep you guys after the break. I got about 30 seconds before it comes up. But I want to tell more of this story, because I want to talk about the veteran community up here in the High Line in Shelby. And, talk about this flag a little more because there's a cost associated with this. There's also, it weighs a certain amount. And you guys – it's not just put it up and then forget about it. You maintain that site as well. So we'll come on back and talk more after the break here. We are 406 and across the great state of Montana. Dwayne Drogettis and Chris Ingenflung from Arise Electric Co-op.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
It's great to have you joining us here today. Great to be in Shelby, Montana. We're on KSEN. I had a chance to catch up with Mark Daniels last night, and Julie and Ann, thank you guys for all the help in getting this set up, as we are 406 and celebrating our connections across Montana, part of the Toll Rope Tour here in Shelby today. Tom Schultz alongside. We'll continue our conversation with Chris Ingenthrone, GM of Marias Electric Co-op, and then also Dwayne Drogettis. He's an Army veteran, and there's a pamphlet out here. We're talking about the Montana Veterans Memorial flag and site. This flag is 30 by 50, if I understand it here, and flies just above Shelby, Montana. You can see it from, is it all four directions, Dwayne? I came up from the south today.
All five directions.
All five directions. You can see it from above, too. the Angels can get a view of this. Again, this flag, Chris, you were saying that it in Shelby's wind, and I saw it out there yesterday standing straight up. How much does this flag weigh? What kind of wind does it take to get it to stand straight up? And this is where you have to replace it three or four times a year, because the wind kind of does its thing on it.
It does. It acts as a bullwhip. The flag weighs approximately 100 pounds. Like I say, it's this year everything went up about $1,700 a piece.
Wow.
And a heavy wind, that's why everybody says, how often do you change it? It all depends on how hard the winds blow. That is the bottom line. It, when we, over the years, the last 16 years have been doing this, whatever, you can find that you trim it correctly, it peels off by itself. But you have to watch it every day just to make sure she's flying right.
You trim it, and you were saying how much does it lose in a heavy wind over maybe even 24 hours?
In 24 hours, it could lose anywhere from 4 to 8 inches. It just ravels off.
That's amazing. And so you trim the far side of it and all around it. And
just keep it straight and even is the whole trick after this many years. That's what we found. We've tried so many things.
And there are more flags up there as well, and it's part of a bigger site. As you look at this pamphlet here, I'm seeing you've got statutes and memorials and dedication. This had to have happened not overnight.
No, it took, it basically started with the thought and all the way through from 9/11. So that tells you pretty much how long it took to get it going.
Yeah.
And these guys, their dedication, those originally, I call them the founding fathers of the flags. The one was a metal worker. He did the whole Iwo Jima thing. Another one knew somebody even Boeing. That's where the pole came from. And the concrete work, all these guys. I'm going to mention their names in case I forgot some. But it's in the website, the Shelby Veterans Memorial Foundation. You can look up and find out a lot more.
That's good. Shelby Veterans Memorial Foundation. Mm-hmm. Chris, why is Marias Electric Co-op part of this?
As a co-op, we like to help out the community, do whatever we can for the community. And I kind of got involved when I first came up here back in 2007. It was actually the day I was going to do my interview, and I crested the hill, and I seen that flag. And I was in awe. And it's the first thing you see when you come into town. It's the last thing you look at when you leave town. And it's just, to me, it's just a tremendous sight and a project that, you know, these group of veterans really had a vision, and they put that vision in and turned it into a project that's just, for me, it's just phenomenal. And anything we can do as far as Marias River Electric and our employees we're just grateful and honored to be a part of it.
I want to ask you a question here, too. We're going to run out of time, but Dwayne, the veteran community up here, real strong, huh?
Very strong. Just the patriotic community, you think about it, this is the only town this size that has a flag like that. I mean, all of Montana are patriots, don't get me wrong, but when they put this together, this community, this town, the whole High Line backed this, I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. And going and with donations and MRE helping and everything, it's just incredible.
I better get a ride. Marias River Electric, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
Chris, who is a tow rope hero at MRE?
I would have to say Ben Whithelm. Mm-hmm. You know, he's actually our fire chief in town. And we have a lot of volunteers at the co-op, but Ben really, you know, like Dwayne said, he's available and he'll help whenever he can, do whatever he can, and fabricate things, and he's just a big part of it.
That's good. I appreciate that. That's what makes the community real
tight. And with Ben, quickly, we were up putting up new pulleys. We heard the fire alarms and everything, and I look around, and Ben's gone. This is a trail of dust heading down to the shops. And he'd be a good nominee.
Oh, good, good. We'll put him down, okay? And
we'll
put his name and your name into the drawing for this zero-turn mower. That's not a bad deal. I have to say, Dwayne, my wife and I were just talking about this. There are these large flags that you see in various areas, and they draw some emotion.
Really?
You know, there's something about a flag like that in 30 by 50 that it makes you feel something for your country.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anybody I've ever brought anyone up there, and I lowered it down, and I can lower it down to where they can just touch it and you look up at it. It's just, it changes you.
Thank you. Yeah, we need more of that. All right. Thanks for what you guys do. All right.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that. That's Dwayne Drogettis and Chris Ingenthrone, the GM of the Marias River Electric Co-op. We'll come on back with more. We are tow rope touring here in Shelby, Montana. It's From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Going to be in Hammer tomorrow. We'll be on the air there starting at 9 o'clock and continuing on through noon. Also, the tow rope tour will go to Malta on Friday, and we've got some heroes to recognize there. Go to our website. You can go voicesofmontana.com or also northernbroadcasting.com and check that. It's brought to you by Mountain Health Co-op and a chance for you to nominate some heroes. And also, we'll be hopefully recognizing maybe even you for the work that you have done in your community. Today here in Shelby, Montana, as Tom Schultz is back on Voices, it's Jamie Burnell, Dr. G. That's just going to be a lot easier. Dr. Todd Generelli. Yep, got that. And then Dr. Justin Hooker here. They are with Marias Healthcare Services. And Jamie, as the CEO, I want to have you talk about how this healthcare community came together, especially during the pandemic. Now, we had Judy Richmond on a little bit earlier, and she was talking about just all the little pieces that need to kind of fit together to make the whole thing work.
Correct. The system had to come seamlessly together. And what we did as a facility, as well as partnering facilities, we created one incident command for the region. Critical access hospitals, community health centers, health departments, Indian health systems. And we had a joint incident command every single day to share information and facilitate resources.
Dr. Hooker, how did that play out for you in providing services to your patients? And I know you probably were on the phone an awful lot. People had a lot of questions during this time, and it was kind of difficult to provide that hands-on service that I think physicians really like to do when they care for their patients.
Oh, that's correct. It was difficult at first. We didn't know exactly. We didn't have a lot of information about what we were doing, and the incident command helped us kind of collaborate and keep the message consistent among healthcare workers and facilities, which then translated to a clearer message for our community members and helped us facilitate whatever we needed to allow this pandemic to pass as seamlessly as possible.
Dr. G, what were some of the resources that were most valuable to you? I mean, you probably had to go out and get advice from a large number of folks or specialists, I presume.
I was involved with the infectious disease docs in the state. I got to sit down in their meetings, talk about the ins and outs of the new pandemic,
yeah,
which was very helpful. And then a lot of the medical communities like University of Washington, University of Colorado, and then back east in New York, Columbia, for example, all had really good information that they were figuring out on the fly. I mean, this was all new to us, new to everybody, and we were able to pool the resources of all of those really smart people and steal their input, basically, for little old Shelby.
How much did they know at that point?
Not a lot.
Yeah.
They knew more than we did, but
yeah,
they were on the front lines, and we were too. We had an outbreak very early. our percentage in Toole County was comparable with New York and Seattle in the worst of it in March of April last year. So we were in it.
I think the state is aware of that. And Jamie, as I was thinking about this, that got the rest of Montana, I think, to take this a lot more seriously than we had originally.
It did. It wasn't just the pandemic. We still had regular health care to care for, too. We had our heart attacks and our car wrecks and our diabetes occurring, and we needed to create access to care and create our medical community as a safe place, as well as delivery of care in other areas. So we kept all our locations open, but we streamlined which way our patients went to try and keep our staff and our hospital safe.
Dr. Hooker, did we see communication improve throughout this? I mean, we always start to kind of look at the silver lining, because I think that's our nature in Montana, to try to make something good or find some value in whatever it is that we're facing. As I think a big part of this was communication. Has that improved? What do you see that working for you going forward?
As information became new and as information changed throughout the pandemic, the communication was critical, not only for the community members, but for the healthcare providers, our patients. It was rough at first, and with the changing information, we had to adapt. But I think we have a good system now of receiving proper information, scientific data, and being able to get that to the community as best as possible.
It was fascinating watching. Every single day, Instant Command would gather information. Dr. G, Dr. Hooker both participated as health officers and medical providers of the community, and then that information had to disseminate to hundreds of employees and to keep everybody on the same path every day with the constant changing. I think the system was impressive.
Dr. G, what were some of the challenges that the medical community faced and found ways to overcome them?
I think the biggest one was misinformation. There was a lot of stuff that was not true and still remains today that confuses the message and is not good science. And that's hard because, it's just hard to debunk those myths and misinformation. We still fight that today.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that a big part of your job, Jamie?
We had a communications officer reporting out to the media as well as for the facility, so we had one streamlined message. So it wasn't my direct part, but we were involved in the communication process.
And Dr. Hooker is the health officer for Toole County, and I'm the health officer for Pend'Oreille County.
Oh, thank you.
So keeping – and the health departments in both counties were great, and county commissioners were great keeping the message where it was supposed to be and moving forward. We had a lot of moving parts trying to keep everybody informed and making good decisions.
In a cohesive message as well between counties, because if Pend'Oreille is doing one thing and we're doing something different, that word spreads and people are even more confused. So we had to, constantly be in contact with surrounding counties, the state, the federal government.
How did you guys keep it all together? I mean, in terms of, it had to be emotional as well. In the positions and the professional people that I've talked to through all this, it was very hard on them as well, and all the people who served. What encouraged you?
As a healthcare provider, I think it was difficult for us, but I'd be remiss to say that we shared the large portion of the burden. I think the community as a whole was also burdened, and there were dozens of individuals and businesses that stepped up and went above and beyond.
Who were the total heroes for you?
I couldn't name a single individual. I'm serious when I say dozens. And if it wasn't for our teachers, our ambulance workers, our business owners, our pharmacies, police officers, that this community would not have made it through. Everyone had to do something more. And that's what encouraged me the most, was that even though I was doing more and stepping up, there was dozens around me that were doing the same thing. And we kind of came together to get through it.
Dr. G, it's probably the same thing, but is there a total peril that comes to mind for you? Somebody, maybe it's Jamie, because Jamie said, well, it's these two.
And she was the anchor when we were all trying to jump off the edge. You go, come back, it'll be okay. We'll figure this out. Yeah, totally.
Jamie, go ahead. What's special about these two?
Well, I just love the team that I get to work with. The healthcare team in all our communities are impressive people. Every one of them said, I'm here, this is what I signed up to do. And it makes being in my position a lot easier. When we have limited nurses, limited doctors, and limited beds, those were our criticals. How do we manage and how do we make more and how do we get through this? And to be able to work with really talented professionals in these communities that have rich people in the sense of passion and ethics and morals gives you a lot of pride.
Yeah. How are things now?
The new norm.
We've got the numbers are low and really sick people, the elderly, are either vaccinated or have already had it, and so that's down. The bulge now is in the 30s and 40s. We'll see what the long-term consequences of the infection will be. The COVID long haulers is going to be a problem. There is no cure, so prevention is the key here.